elected officials coming to present to us on the SKA. You're most welcome. The department, you're most welcome. Dr. Alf has also asked for to be excused at some stage because his wife is undergoing an operation this morning. Also, Honorable Tuck, who's gone to hospital today with a knee problem. And she's the one who spoke very well on the SKA at the debate, and unfortunately she's not here. But you're most welcome, and we're looking forward to the presentation and the update on the SKA. Very interesting program and project in our country. My name is Lindwe Masewa. I'm the chairperson of the committee. I'll ask members of the committee to just introduce themselves, and then I'll ask also from the side to introduce themselves. Thank you.
I'm Kassel Matale, a member of the committee. Thank you.
Nobus Olandonyeni, member of the committee.
Good morning, Nick Kornoff, also a member.
Good morning, Chantal King, member.
Good morning, Annelie Lopriek, also a member of the committee.
Good morning, I'm Tando Kolopodoman, committee assistant.
Good morning, I'm
Suresh Nigalinder,
Communication Services. Good morning, I'm Lorenzo Reynard, responsible for communication to the SK South Africa.
Good morning, Anita Lewis, responsible for Africa Planning.
Kujong Washing, data processing for SKA.
Rob Adam, Managing Director, SKA South Africa.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Thomas Ofterheide. I'm Deputy Director General in the Department. I would like to express the apologies of the DG that he has to present our annual performance plan to the Select Committee right now. So if he wishes us all good luck with this.
Did phone also this morning for that.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Yolanda de Blanche, and I'm a member of the committee.
Thank you very much. Yes.
My name is Takarari Namongari, Acting Chief Director for Astronomy, Department of Science and Technology.
I think without much waste of time, over to Dr. Rob.
Thanks very much, Madam Chair. I've prepared a rather broad general presentation, as you've seen. I think it arrived with you about a week ago. But if there are any specific questions that you have, please don't hesitate to chip in. It should take about 40 minutes or so to get through it, and then obviously the rest of the time is available for whatever questions that there are. So, starting on page 2 of the presentation, page 1 is the cover page, which shows a wonderful picture of where we are at the moment with Meerkat. Shows the numbers of dishes which are already deployed on site. Going to page 2, there are 5 sets of activities that we currently conduct in South Africa in radio astronomy. First of all, we operate research facilities on behalf of local and international user community. We also have in-house researchers in the different facilities. We're busy at the moment with construction and engineering with Meerkat and AVN, and so this is a rather different. This particular set of activities tends to dominate the portfolio at the moment. Although there is research being done, at this stage we've got more people constructing and designing then we have scientists actually using the facilities, because that's the stage that we're at in these projects. We're also planning for SKA Phase 1. In other words, that's the when the meerkats finish being constructed, SKA 1 will begin. And we're also conceptualizing SKA Phase 2, which is where it stretches out into the rest of Africa. There's a large human capital development program. This is to develop university-based radio astronomy in South Africa. We put a lot of effort into that, because when we decided to bid for the project, the radio astronomy community in the universities was relatively small. It was much smaller than optical astronomy. And so we've had a very aggressive human capital development program to develop that community. We brought in senior chairs from abroad to develop our own people. We've developed our own people. They've become professors. And so we've developed this community very aggressively. We also have artisan programs in the Northern Cape because it's much easier for us to make use of people who already live in that area as artisans and skilled people than it is to parachute others from Cape Town and Johannesburg and the rest of the country in. Also, it serves as a way to engage the communities in that area and make them part of the project, and really to diversify the economy, bring forward the people in the Northern Cape. And we also have a strong engagement in primary and secondary schools in the Northern Cape. First of all, as a corporate social investment initiative, but also because we need skilled people, educated people in science and engineering in those areas. And also we're busy commercializing some of the cutting-edge technologies that are being developed as part of the SKA. So there are five broad areas that we're active in. Let's go down to the SKA itself. What does it stand for? SKA is Square Kilometer Array. Why is it called SKA? Well, originally, what they wanted to build, the people who thought of this, was an instrument large enough so that if you added up all of the dish areas, that would make 1 square kilometer. It's been a bit confusing, I know, where some people thought that this is just an array that will fit into 1 square kilometer and that's it. But in fact, that's not it. And we've always been very clear about that, but I mean, I certainly can understand where the misunderstanding could come in. It's a mega project, an international effort to build the world's largest radio telescope. Originally, it was administered directly by the Department of Science and Technology. But in 2005, the National Research Foundation was requested by DST to take over the administration because they set up as a research facility, research organization, and DST is a government department. It's much more difficult to be flexible enough in that environment. Recently, the minister has requested that SKA South Africa and HeartRAO, which is the Heart of the Earth Radio Astronomical Observatory, merge to become a single radio astronomy observatory. And in her budget speech, she pointed the way towards also merging with optical at some point in the future so that you'd have an astronomy institute. No date's been given yet for that, but that's what's on her mind. So this will mean that SKA South Africa and HeartRAO will merge to become a national facility. The idea is to consolidate and to be able to manage the affairs of radio astronomy in the country in a coherent way rather than having two focuses for doing this. The transition to the single entity started on the 1st of April and this year, 2017, and by the 1st of April 2018 will be complete. Going back 5 years, and this was 5 years on the 25th of May, there was a competition originally involving several countries, including China, Argentina, Canada. but ultimately this field was narrowed down to just Australia and South Africa, and there was a bid which was adjudicated by international scientists and policy makers, resulting in a split site decision where South Africa and the rest of Africa would host the so-called mid-frequency part of the telescope. There you see on that map of Africa the locations of the nodes. And then in Australia there would be the low-frequency component. This is arguably an expensive way of doing it. There have been, I guess, management issues resulting from this, cost issues. But also, I think realistically what the international community felt was that if South Africa alone hosted it, the project would probably lose Australia and Australia's financial contribution too. And so you can, it's six or one, half a dozen of the other, probably it was the best decision, but whatever it is, that's what we have now. International organization, 10 countries, members of it, Australia, Canada, China, India, Italy, New Zealand, South Africa, Sweden, the Netherlands, UK. Portugal, we very recently heard, is intending to join as a full member. I've seen the letter from the Portuguese minister. And Germany has indicated that they would like to become an associate member, which is similar to Canada. I'm quite sure what the reason is for associate member rather than full member, but they'll presumably tell us in the fullness of time. There's also a range of observer members, France, Spain, Japan, Switzerland, for example, Korea, South Korea as well. And they have the right to sit and listen to the discussions that we have in the board in the open sessions. Also, the headquarters of the SKA organization, Jodrell Bank Observatory near Manchester in the UK. There was a competition also for that right to be the headquarters. Italy was the other contending country, and ultimately the board decided on the UK. Also, and this is not quite as visible, there are approximately 100 organizations and companies from 20 countries who are participating in the design and development of the project. So this is a cutting-edge engineering project, and so what you have are universities, government labs, and companies in the private sector in different consortia, each consortium focusing on a particular work package from computing data through to civil engineering, and they work together to come up with the best design. If you turn over the page, I mean, that's just a picture of the people who attended the engineering meeting in Stellenbosch, and it gives you a picture of who's in the organization. Because those are these top-notch engineers from many participating countries. That was hosted by us in Stellenbosch last year. 260 delegates from 18 countries. Moving on to the current negotiations taking place to form an intergovernmental organization. Currently there's an organization which is set up as a company under British law, which is what the SKA organization is. There's a desire to move from that to set up an international treaty organization. You can't, you know, simply run an international organization as a British company forever. And these negotiations are currently underway. They're located in Italy. That was a political decision which I think derived from the fact that Italy lost a bid to be the headquarters, and so in the nature of these things, that was the decision reached as to give them a lead role as well. South Africa will be a founding member in the establishment of it. In fact, we've got two senior members, one from the Department of Science and Technology, Don de Toy, and one from SKA South Africa, Adrian Tiplady, who are leading the preparation for that establishment. The negotiation of the convention documents, that's supported by the Office of our Chief State Law Advisor in South Africa. And the signing of this treaty agreement is planned for later this year in Rome. And as members of the committee would know, in terms of the South African Constitution, any multilateral accession to a multilateral body requires ratification by Parliament. And so later this year, this document, this treaty will come first to this committee and then ultimately to the General Assembly for ratification. And something that sometimes bothers me a bit, simply because of the fact that Parliament's business is quite pressed. And yeah, we can't at this stage, given that the negotiations are not concluded yet, we can't give dates. But as soon as that happens, I'm sure that the Department of Science and Technology will be in touch with the committee so that that discussion can begin. Moving on then to page 8, presentation, SK and South Africa. I've discussed the merger between SK South Africa and Hartrau, where what this means is that the SK South Africa moved from beyond simply being a project of which I'm the director, it moves then towards becoming a fully fledged national facility. And within this initiative, there are a whole range of projects clustered. You've got the Global SK Telescope project, which I've spent some time now describing. You've got the MEERKAT, which is our precursor, and I'm saying a lot more about the MEERKAT in a minute. You've got the AVN, the African Very Long Baseline Interferometry Network, which was a way of bringing our African partner countries into radio astronomy, given that the SK Phase 2, which they would be directly involved in, is sometime in the future. So this AVN project was devised in order to develop capability and to maintain our responsibility towards continuing the project with them. And then there's the Hydrogen Epoch of Reionization project, HERA, which is in fact largely an American-driven project funded by the National Science Foundation and also by the Gordon Moore Foundation. And this is located on the MEERKAT site, the MEERKAT SK site up in the Northern Cape. And the reason it's there, they've located it there rather than anywhere else, is because it's a great site and they see it as being managed well by us, by South Africa. And what it's a very interesting project here, what it aims to do is to determine the moment and to characterize the period when the first stars began to shine. It's mind-blowing that, and I certainly think that when it happens, whoever the principal investigator is on that paper would be a very strong contender for a Nobel Prize. It's related to the SKA in that it's a low-frequency instrument, and it's in the same way that MEERKAT is a precursor for SKA mid-frequency, HERA is a precursor, even though it's in South Africa, for SK Low in Australia. So that's, from a scientific point of view, our connection with the Australian part of the project. And then we're also busy doing a range of infrastructure development projects for MEERKAT, SKA, clearing land, buying farms, etc. And then there are also some other telescope and geology projects carried on under the auspices of the new national facility. Moving on to the next page, we have also CAT-7, which, and CAT-7 is the engineering testbed for MEERKAT. That's where we learned to do this stuff, how we learned to design and build an array. It's still used scientifically, though, and we intend to continue doing that. It has, I guess when MEERKAT is commissioned, it may be less interesting to South African radio astronomers, but nevertheless, we'll still continue to operate it from an educational perspective. And then CBAS, which is an international instrument, operating at a higher frequency, C-band. I've talked about HERA. And then also the farm management. Significant human capital development. We have this grant and bursary program that I've described, which is at this stage, I think, 940 separate grant supports for students that we've given. over the past 11 years. University chairs, we support technical training. And then there's collaborative human development, human capital development, for example, cooperating with the United Kingdom and the so-called Mutant Fund, where we train people from our African partner countries in radio astronomy and engineering related to radio astronomy. The institutional objectives to optimize South Africa's contribution to and benefit from the International ESCAP project, to sustain globally competitive and transformed radio astronomy and space geodesy research and infrastructure in South Africa and abroad where appropriate, to optimize the associated national socioeconomic benefits from radio astronomy and space geodesy activities, and to promote radio astronomy and space geodesy capacity in Africa. Those are the corporate objectives of the organization. And all of the activities you can essentially distill from one of those four objectives. Much of this may be repetition for members, but I've got it here just for the purpose of completeness. You're, I imagine, aware of the two phases of the SKA being developed between 2018 and the late 2020s, where from in phase one in South Africa, you've got an array about 160 kilometers across, including the Meerkat. And then in phase two, that array would include nodes in other parts of South Africa and other parts of the African continent. And similarly in Australia, at the end of phase one, there will be low frequency nodes spiraling out across Australia. We'll finish Meerkat March 2018. Commissioning will take place. And then we'll be able to, it's very exciting, we're able to launch first telescope in Ghana in August 2017. We'll be ready to do that, and in fact, we're soon about to do real science there. It's been a difficult project that if we had had the choice again, we probably wouldn't have started in Ghana. Started in a country closer to us, and one which we where we understand the supply chain better, such as Botswana or Namibia or Zambia. But Ghana, from a scientific point of view, it made sense because long baseline interferometry works where best where you have countries separated by large distances. You've got as a collaborating partner European countries, and then Ghana is kind of halfway between Europe and South Africa. And so having a space like that made sense from a science point of view, but from a point of view of actually delivering the project, it was tough. And I've described HERA, that's the one looking at the first stars. This will be commissioned in about approximately 3 years from now. What will our role be in the SKA ultimately? Well, for 5 years, from March next year, we will operate Meerkat as a scientific instrument. Then at the end of those 5 years, we'll integrate it, or it will be integrated into SKA phase one. In parallel, SKA phase one will be being constructed. And then almost the last thing that happens as part of construction will be there are 133 new SKA one dishes. We will have 64 Meerkat dishes operating as a separate array. Then the last thing to happen will be that those 64 dishes will get integrated with the other 133, making 197 in all. At that point, even though those dishes will be the property, and the site will be the property of South Africa, they will be managed by the international project as part of that project. And what we will then, and the National Research Foundation will be contracted to manage the site, or whatever it may be at that stage that the ministers idea goes ahead, it will be an astronomy institute, but whatever it is, it will be some South African institution that will manage it. And then what we will have as South Africa is a so-called Tier 1 data node, where the data that comes out of the SKA will be stored for South African scientific purposes. Each other country or other region will also have their Tier 1 node. The data will flow from the so-called Tier 0 to the Tier 1, and from there onwards there will be other, there will be a hierarchy of other nodes, Tier 2s in different centres in South Africa, in Cape Town, in Johannesburg, Kimberley, etc., etc. So there will be a kind of almost a tree of different nodes where the data will be used by the scientists. National Research Foundation manages 132,000 hectares, possibly in partnership with Sandparks, and we're busy with that discussion now. And Sandparks obviously has experience of managing vast tracts of wilderness areas. We don't have that experience, and so it makes sense to have a partnership with an organization like Sandparks. And then the Astronomy Geographic Advantage Management Authority be established as a so-called government component within the Department of Science and Technology in terms of the Astronomy Geographic Advantage Act to regulate that area and to make sure that it's managed in accordance with the Act. So, getting on to the MEERKAT now. And I understand there's quite a complicated hierarchy of instruments. They're phased at different times, but in the end there's I'll hope that the committee will see a purpose and a way to fit this jigsaw together. We originally decided to build a MEERKAT because we wanted to be able to demonstrate to the world community that as South Africa, we were capable of doing this. We were, remember, back in that time, around about 2009 or so, we were the underdog in this bidding race. And we wanted to, first of all, show the international community that we were capable of doing this. We also wanted to develop an instrument that if we lost the bid and we ended up with nothing at all, we would have something for all that effort. So, in a way, it was a two-pronged strategy, and in our view, anyway, it's paid off well. And we will have this for 5 years as the foremost radio telescope in the world, managed by South Africa. We also were able to demonstrate that capability. It has also given huge focus to high technology in South Africa, and also we've developed a range I've described the Human Capital Development Programs, a range of such programs from all the way from chairs through faculty positions, through doctoral positions, master's positions, right through to school level associated with MEERKAT. First dish completed in 2015. Initial images using those four dishes were produced in 2016. Turn over the page, this is a very schematic way of looking at what happens. You get these very faint radio waves coming from outer space. And those are those wavy arrows in the picture there, coming down and reflecting on that 13.4 meter diameter dish. What then happens is that they are reflected up to that subreflector. And the reason it's designed like that is many telescopes are center fed. And so it's reflected up to a receiver in the center. But what happens is that gets in the way of what you're measuring. It blocks out some of the radio waves, and it just gets in the way because they can't get past it. So this is a different design, so-called offset Gregorian design. And then immediately below that sub-reflector, you see a sort of platform there, and on that platform there's a receiver. And the sub-reflector focuses the radio waves on that receiver, almost like a magnifying glass for optical rays. And then at that point also, those radio waves get digitized. In other words, from an analog signal, they get turned into noughts and ones and sent down fiber from the individual dish to a building where there's a whole range of electronic and computational tools that make those signals coherent together. You're getting a signal coming, looking at the same part of the sky from each of the antennas. You've got to then put all of those in a coherent system and add them up so that you get the benefit of all of the different baselines and all of the different dishes contributing towards the sensitivity. At that point, you can either have your processor, your science data processor, in that building, or you can have it somewhere else. At this stage, ours is in the Center for High Performance Computing, the Meerkat one in Cape Town. There's a reason for that. That's simply because of the capability for running a center like that is in that center, and it's also a DST facility, so there's an efficiency gain in that respect. And at this stage, transporting the data at distance doesn't pose that much of a problem. We've also got SANREN, which is a DST-run research network, which is at our disposal. And so the data is gathered up in the Northern Cape and processed to an extent there and then sent down here to Cape Town, where the scientists will have access to it and then will then be able to conduct their research programs based on the data. It will also be turning over then the most sensitive radio telescope in its frequency band until SK Phase 1 is built. The initial sensitivity spec makes Meerkat the most sensitive radio telescope in so-called L-band without increasing any cost. And in fact, one of the hugely affirming things about Meerkat is that this is the first telescope ever that's been built that's performed better than it was designed to perform. About 30% better in terms of sensitivity. And the reason for that is that generally telescopes are built with lots of scientists. What we did was we used lots of engineers on this one. And engineers are used to building things, scientists are more used to using them. And it was just a difference in the emphasis around the project management, where we now have an instrument which actually performs better than we thought it was going to, which is in fact unheard of in the world of any astronomy, frankly, and generally in the world of large scientific projects. So, the Meerkat schedule, we've gone through a range of design reviews, preliminary design review in 2011, first dish on site, March 2014, we finished the 16 antenna array June 2016 when the members of this committee, I think, were able to travel up and have a look at the array at that point and have the chief scientist explain various capabilities that it has and show the images. The 32 antenna array we completed in March this year. 64 antenna array will be March 2018. So we're in between, obviously, those two dates and running as fast as we can to meet that final target. Some highlights on the slide. I'm not going to go through every single line on it. It's available for information. But I think one of the key things I want to emphasize is that the 75% local content in the Meerkat. That goes from manufacturing to civils. I suppose the overall design, the detailed design of the antenna was not a local thing. The components for the science data processor, those computational components are obviously imported, as are some of the hardware components for the electronics, but certainly all of the integration is local, and all of the construction and a large amount of the manufacturing. Something that we're very proud of is that after 5 years, there haven't been any specification changes, no cost increases. And there's a contractual provision for non-performance by the contractors, which we've hardly had to exercise. Nevertheless, what we did was we put the risk on the contractors rather than take it ourselves. And so that if there's a cost overrun by one of the contractors, that's for their account rather than for ours. This is a moving target. I think there may be more dishes lifted by now, but by when we sent this presentation on, there were 46, I think there may be 47 now. Handed over 36 antennas, what that means is that when you lift the dish onto the pedestal, and the 57 pedestals, by the way, lifted, or erected, you have to check it so that it performs properly, and only after you've checked everything do you then hand it over, does it then get handed over by the contractor, and we tick a box and say, okay guys, we can now pay you for that, you've done your work. It's a summary here. Project's been managed pretty tightly. No contract variation orders on big projects. And you're allowed in large projects in terms of treasury procurement, I think, to exceed by 15% the original price without going back to ask for permission to change. And correct me if I'm wrong, Lorenzo, but I think it's less than 1%. I think it's about 0.15% or so in terms of the Meerkat dishes that we've gone over budget on. So it's been a very, very tightly managed project. And as I said earlier, its sensitivity is much better than we thought, which means that we can, in fact, offer more telescope time than we originally contemplated. This quoting from Paul Alexander, who's head of astrophysics at Cambridge. He says, the work on control and monitoring at SKA South Africa is the best that I've seen in the last few years anywhere in the world. And I think that really comes from the philosophy that we've adopted, at least my predecessor, Bernie Fanneroff, really instigated in the project. And he started it off that way, and I've continued. Is to treat it at this point as an engineering project informed by science requirements, rather than simply a science project. And in many large projects of this nature, you as a manager of the project, you tread a fine line between scientists and engineers. From an outsider point of view, they may seem to be very much the same kind of creature, but they're actually very different. A scientist wakes up in the morning and says, my gosh, I've had a bright idea. I must go and tell the project manager that unless he implements this idea, we will be left behind and we won't have a good instrument. Whereas what the engineer tries to do is freeze the specification because he wants to build something. And so, obviously you can't ignore the scientist because he might be right. It might be that, something that you're doing is obsolete. But if you pay too much attention to them, you never get anything done. And I think what we've done is we've got that line more or less right. This is just a summary of what I've already said, but showing a map of where these antennas are. What you've got them, where you've got, they're clustered quite tightly in that small core, and some of them going out to larger distances. The larger distances give you better resolution. Next slide is the antennas built to date in that core area, not showing the outlying ones. Fortunately here, all the dishes pointing in the same direction, so they're all at the same angle, whereas in the front cover, I think they were pointing in different directions. The next page shows you the power of the instrument. top left-hand corner, and you may have seen these, and I apologize if I'm repeating myself here, because you may have seen them last year, and if you walked around the exhibition for the budget vote, you would have seen them as well. Top left-hand corner is Cat 7 in 2012. That's what you get from that 7 antenna array. What you get from just 4 meerkat dishes, remember 7 is top left, top right is 4 meerkat antennas, much better than the original 7 of Cat 7, simply because we learned how to do this thing now. Cat 7 was the engineering test bed that you can argue that we spent 200 million rand on it. Where did the 200 million rand go to? Well, it went to teaching us how to do this thing very well and not to waste any money in a much bigger instrument. But at the same time, obviously, it's still used as an educational tool, and some research also gets done on it. Moving to the bottom left-hand corner, that's 16 meerkat antennas, and then not using the 32 yet, but taking another 16 as part of that array. You must remember that originally the 16 that you saw last year were all in that core region. What we've now done is we've taken in the next 16, we've taken them from further out in the array, so that you've got the longer baselines there, and so you get more resolution. It just shows that resolution is baseline dependent. The longer the baseline, the better resolution you get.
What are you looking
for? I'll tell you now. That is a radioactive galaxy with a black hole at the center, and there's material being ejected. This is a so-called FR2 galaxy, which has jets in two directions. F stands for Fanarov, actually. It was named after when Bernie Fanarov was a radio astronomer when he was young, before he did all kinds of other things. He had this type of galaxy named after him. And so what that is a galaxy ejecting material in both directions. And that material is ionized, it's accelerated, and that's what gives you that radio output. Originally, you would not have been in the Cat 7 image. You couldn't see what that was. You can now see something very different. And in that image of the sky, in one patch of the sky, previously 70 galaxies were known. This was from an Australian instrument. Just with those 16 antennas, we were able to get to count 1,300 of them. If we move on then to, maybe that's just a picture of Meerkat with the artist's kind of picture of it with looking up at the Milky Way in the background. Moving on to the next slide. This is a new giant radio galaxy identified with the 16 antennas. It's never been seen before. These images typically show radio galaxies in the distant universe. A small number of these galaxies are huge in size. Image on the left shows a linear feature radio galaxy that's 4 million light years long. So that's one single galaxy where it takes the light 4 million years to get from one side to the other. At this stage, what we're doing is we're just showing capability of the instrument. When it's commissioned next year, you'll get some real science being done, and as a result of, in anticipation of that, we have a science program. We issued in 2010 a call for scientific proposals from around the world. The reason that we issued it such a long time ago is interesting, and I asked that myself when I first came on board. I said, well, why did we ask people all that long time ago what science they wanted to do? And in a sense, we did it because Australia did it. And they were at that stage involved in a campaign to sell their bid and their instruments to the world. And so given that it was started on that footing, we really had no option but to also do it. But what it's done is it succeeded in doing that. And it also led to strong support and interest in Meerkat, including international investment. It's a better telescope than we planned, as I've said. And we requested calls for large survey projects, in other words, projects that survey different aspects of the sky and look at different frequencies and look for different phenomena. Two-thirds of the time of the telescope will be used by these large survey projects. And the rest of it will be open time, and we'll issue another call for proposals for open time. That open time will consist of smaller projects, and we're hoping will be heavily subscribed by South African scientists whom we've now developed in the meantime. One of the issues which is highlighted very much by the project is so-called big data. It was one of the areas that we first, well, let me go back to the beginning. When we argued for this project to Cabinet in the early 2000s, what we said was, if you put very smart people on a great project and you fund them properly, other things will come out of the project other than just the science and the scientific instruments that you're going to build. In the same way that Silicon Valley came out of the Apollo project, the internet came out of CERN, the large particle accelerator in Geneva, Wi-Fi came out of radio astronomy in Australia. You will find innovations coming out of this project. At this stage, we can't tell you what they'll be, but they will certainly happen. And I think the big data, it wasn't even a term that people used in those days. The big data is probably it, because it provides a platform for all sorts of other applications, you know, not just astronomy, but it can be applied to biotech, to climate change, mitigation studies, etc., etc. It's a very, very wide platform with major applicability. You know, the Meerkat Science Data Processor will complete the implementation of the largest data storage system of its kind, and that will be hosted at the Center for High Performance Computing in Rosebank, geared for next-generation large survey telescopes, such as Meerkat and the SKA, applicability in industry, and a key component in the storage system was developed locally as part of our beneficiation of the South African high-tech industry. Partnered with other stakeholders in the system, mentioned National Research Infrastructure, together with CSIR and the Inter-University Institute for Data Intensive Astronomy, IDEA, building a shared platform. It's a precursor model on how SKA infrastructure will be developed, providing an opportunity for fellow African countries as well to participate in the SKA. There are also partnerships with global technology companies such as IBM, very interested in working with us. And machine learning, which is another word for artificial intelligence, and high-performance cloud computing. On to discussing our African program. I said in the beginning of my address here that we developed the African Very Long Baseline Interferometry Network as a way, first of all, of engaging with the countries that were part of our bid, the African countries, to bring them in at an earlier phase into radio astronomy. But also, it has a scientific logic of its own. And you know, what we're now doing is we're going beyond phase one in Ghana to fast-track this phase, Namibia and Botswana in phase two and potentially Zambia as well. And then in a later phase, moving on to Madagascar, Mauritius, Mozambique, Kenya. This particular project, the AVM, is by and large funded by DIRCO through the African Renaissance Fund rather than through the Vote on Science and Technology, but nevertheless it's executed by us, and that's why I'm discussing it here. That's just the next slide, just shows, first of all, the project plan for the different countries. And then what we're very proud of, we refurbished this dish at Katumzi in Ghana. This was a dish which was originally used by Vodafone. It was donated to GIEC, which is the Ghanaian agency which is executing the project with us, and will ultimately take over the management of the facility. Vodafone gave this antenna to the Ghanaian government because the technology for telecommunication has moved away from dish technology towards fibers, and so they no longer had needed the dish for their own telecoms purposes, and so they donated it. This, as I said before, will be launched in August by Minister Pandor, by Ghanaian Minister, and I'm sure Durko, being the funding department, will also have a role to play. Moving on to human capital development, that's a bar chart of, on the right-hand side, the total numbers of bursaries given over the years, and then also showing how it's building up, and it's built up to a kind of equilibrium just above 100 or so a year, which is, I think, the pipeline that we're comfortable with. This is delegates at the Postgraduate Bursary Conference. This is a conference held every year in Cape Town, and this shows the cross-section of people whom we've been supporting by means of our bursaries. The next bar chart shows the different types of students that we've been supporting. In other words, on the one hand, the left-hand side, you get the very top-end research chairs, professorships, etc., through to postdocs, doctoral, masters, BSc honors, etc. And we're starting then at the artisan level as well. That program still needs to get up to the same level of maturity as the university program. Looking at who we're supporting, of the 943, that's 707 South Africans, 166 other African nationals, 70 non-African nationals, 257 women, 686 men. You might ask why so many other African nationals, quite a high ratio. The reason for that is that they were part of our bid. Without those countries' active involvement, the actual program won't be successful. So there's an operational need. And also, you know, frankly, to include countries to assist you to win a bid and then to exclude them from a human capital program would be ethically wrong as well, I think. Next page, we've also been very active in primary and secondary schools. You know, before, there had never been a matriculant passing in maths and science at Carnarvon High School. Over the past 2 years, we got 5 in the year before last and 4 last year, and we hope to be able to continue at that level. We've placed teachers in that school. We'd like to be able to do it in other schools in the area as well, but unfortunately Carnarvon High is the only one that offers maths at higher grade level. So we have a program where we invite those schools to send their pupils, their learners to Carnarvon High to be taught at higher grade level if they so wish. Of course there's a tension because no school wants to send its best learners away to another school. So I think that's something we still need to resolve. One of the requests that's come from these schools too is they've said that, you know, actually you've done very well in maths and science, but if we look at what the bottleneck is, it's language skills, because they actually stop the learners from learning right from the start. And so particularly Afrikaans, which is the main meaning of instruction there, we need to look at how we can increase our impact there. Obviously, we have to be a little careful not to become, not to spread ourselves too wide, because, you know, ultimately our job is to build telescopes, and to run a radio astronomy facility, and we need to make an impact both in terms of corporate social investment and also because it's in our interests. But you know, clearly one needs to be very, very mindful to involve local government and the provincial government as well. And we're working now very well, as I was saying a minute or so, with the current municipalities in that region, and also with the Northern Cape Education Department. The local principal of the high school is an extremely cooperative principal. Something that I was absolutely astonished by was there's a group of students from learners from Carnarvon High who, under the tutorship of a young man, Odwa, is his name, they came third in an international robotics competition from schools throughout the world, held in Germany. And these are kids who never, probably hadn't heard of a robot, let alone actually worked with one or manipulated one or programmed one. They're now at that level. If we go on to our role in local communities, one of the things we have to be mindful of is that we have an impact there. We're acquiring in total 132,000 hectares. We already have 18,000 hectares. We had to acquire another 118,000, 36 properties in total. That's 75% complete. That's going to have an impact on the economy of that region. That goes without saying. You're taking 132,000 hectares out of the sheep farming economy. What are we doing in its place? We're spending a lot of money on local suppliers. I mean, I signed a tender spec the other day to get vehicles, to buy vehicles for use on the site. One of the specs was that you had to be from a dealership within 200 kilometers of the site. Catering, hotels, training of local people to become artisans. So what you'll see is a diversification of the economy in that region. It won't be the same. There's no denying that there will be an impact on sheep farming in that specific region. However, if you look at the overall impact on sheep farming countrywide, our estimation is it's less than 0.4% for that particular area. So that, you know, even though if you add up the rands and cents, it's undeniable that there is an effect. From year to year, you won't find it in the noise. One of the guarantees that we've made to farm workers who are affected by the acquisition of those farms, and we know exactly how many there are because in the valuation of the farms, the farmers declare them and get paid out in terms of the liabilities that they have to those farm workers. What we've said is that every farm worker will be employed by us as part of the land management program on the land that they were farm workers on. And so, you know, in a sense, there's no loss of employment to the people directly employed on the farms. In terms of stakeholders, we've recently signed an agreement with the Sand Council. And through this agreement, we aim to protect and promote San culture and heritage and develop the youth of the San people, assist with the connection with the CSIR database. There's a CSIR held database on different medicinal plants which relate to indigenous knowledge systems. We will assist in mapping that our particular site and the plants found on that site onto that database. We also have an agreement with AgriSA, and through this agreement we will, with AgriSA, which is the umbrella farming body in the country, look at projects, you know, from things like predator control, through to looking at alternative ways of managing the land, a range of projects which we're busy agreeing with them at the moment. We also have a good relationship with local municipalities. We've had discussions with Karierberg and the other municipalities around inclusion in their IDPs and their spatial development frameworks. We continue to build on the positive relationship with the local municipalities through collaboration on different levels and affecting all sectors of the local communities around the project. In fact, when we go now to those communities, and we, twice a year I go and I engage with communities in all of the four towns, Brandvlei, Carnarvon, Van Wyksvlei, and Williston. I'm going next week to Brandvlei and Williston. We are introduced by the local municipality. So in other words, we go there and we don't walk in as if we own the place. They say, I'm introducing SKA who's come to tell you about how the project's developing. I think it was an important development that where, you know, they've taken ownership of the project with us. And we are their guests when we go there, as opposed to us walking in and then inviting them as an afterthought. And that's, I think, been a very positive development over the last year or so where, I mean, not that there weren't discussions before, not that we weren't involved, but it's become programmatized now, you know, where there isn't a meeting. They, in fact, the local municipalities advertise the meeting. We don't advertise the meeting. They invite people to their town hall to hear about SKA, Meerkat, etc. So, Madam Chair, that's my address, and I kind of meandered all over the place because I didn't know what specific interests were. But please, my staff and I are very available to answer any questions which you or the other members of the committee might have. I don't know, Thomas, whether you want to add anything.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hayden, for that in-depth presentation. I think it was good that it was wide, so that it broadens and actually it covers everything, you know, so you know, explanation, you know, in detail as to what does this SKA and Meerkat and everything entails, and where the process is, and the genesis, and all those. But let me thank you once again. Let me open it to members for questions. Honorable Matale, Dr. Lodrit, King, and Kuranov, or Ndongeni.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks for the presentation, Doctor, and the team. You know, as usually, the programs that you do, you know, and generally that is done by GST and its entities, is always very, very, very fascinating to me, and I think to members as well. We had a presentation last week about the space science, your satellite, and the dishes. What form of collaboration is there between the two? I think twice I was going home. And we passed the site there, and I was asking myself, because you know we visited the Carnarvon, last year, but we paid a visit there, and then we were told that that place was identified because it's so quiet. And the frequency, there are no disturbances. And as I was passing there last week, you know, that other week and last week, I was asking myself, whether because it seems like it's the route for the aeroplanes, what form of interference or is there any interference? I don't know how to phrase it, but is, you know, the amount of aeroplanes, that the quietness that we're told, that that's the reason to we identify that place, and the fact that something flies over the dishes, which intercept the you know, the, well, it might be for a second or whatever, but it intercepts the signals between the dishes and the things that you are interfacing with. To what extent do the aeroplane pollute or disturb the frequencies? If any, but I think they should be. They are doing something. Probably you are better positioned to can explain that to me, because I don't know, for some reason whether I sleep or whatever, when I wake up I'm passing that place, and I see them and I ask myself that question. And you know, today when they said we are going to meet with you, I said I will ask that question. Informally, before we started here, there was a talk that you were having with Nick, that you don't want to send a signal to them that you are around, you know, because it's like there is a discovery that this extraterrestrial thing is not fiction, it's real. We rather not make them aware, but with what we are trying to do, with what we are doing, if we are able to detect something out there, that there are some activities taking on which does not seem to be natural, obviously, the converse also might be the case, that somebody might be making the same observation about what is happening, because you know we with what we're trying to do, the SK, the Meerkat and everything, we're trying to understand what is out there, so that we can better we can become better people to utilize the space we live in for our own advancement, which I think it's a very, very good thing. But yeah, I think you are doing a good thing, and I think the communities that are there and how you are interacting with them, you are taking them away from their way of life, but you are introducing them to something much better, and very, very, very good. And you know, from most of us think we are better exposed, but I think the sun in that area are going to be way ahead of most of us with what is being done. But I think we must also find a way for people to benefit who are not necessarily from the same community, because we might have the opposite of what we are trying to achieve. You have a community that lives in a different world completely from other villagers somewhere, who when they meet they will look at this one, that this one's not funny, just because, you know, we have not created the same opportunity. I know it's not possible for the entire country to benefit, but somehow we must try and strike the balance so that when the development takes place, it takes place in the whole country. But thanks very much for the presentation. Those were my questions and comments, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Matale. Dr. Lotrud.
Thank you, Chairperson. Also, from my side, thank you for the very interesting presentation. Not that I'm going to pretend here that I understood everything. I would just like to know, you refer to the cost that, basically the cost is stable for the erecting of everything, but I would like to know if you could give us an indication in terms of future operational costs. Are there any challenges that you do foresee, or are things going according to plan? Secondly, I would also like to know, in terms of the local communities there, I do know that at some point there were issues regarding their own telecommunications and their access to, let's say, for example, cell phones and things like that. Have any of those been sorted? And then just lastly, I don't know whether it would be relevant in this regard, but the whole issue of cybersecurity and the big data that you're using, with that, are you looking at that? Is it an issue?
Thank you, Dr. Kalashrit, and I'm okay. I'm also very impressed with what I heard, even though it's the first time I hear it. But my question is basically finance. First of all, I need to know, it took you from 2013 to 2016, you only constructed 32 dishes. Will you be able to complete the balance but before March 2018? Okay, and then what is the actual revised total projected cost of the SKA project? Could it be broken down in terms of cost for South Africa and Australia, and how much has been spent on your project so far? Because that wasn't clearly presented. How much of your total costs have been made available in actual sense so far in South Africa, and how much of it has been in the form of pledges? And then your last one, projects by the nature experience both chief challenges. I would like to see what challenges you foresee going into the future on this project. And then I've also noticed on your slide there's some decrease from 2016 to 2017 in your bursary awarded. Just need to know why there was that slight decrease. And I've noticed that your gender ratio is a bit skewed. You are awarding 257 women bursaries for human capital development. I just want to know, do you have any plans to increase that, maybe the gender ratio, to bring it up a bit more? Because now at the moment we're standing at 27.25% for women, and I feel that's a little bit too low. But other than that, I'm very impressed, especially with the educational side of things.
Honorable Ndonge. Thanks, Chair. I'm covered by comrades.
Thank you, Chair. I will ask questions on the topics I do understand. Firstly, on what you are doing in the schools of Bronkvlei and Williston and Sutherland and Carnarvon, or when you go to those communities. I'm just thinking of idea, and maybe I will look behind you towards the department, is that, there was a concept of twinning schools. So if you look at Carnarvon High School, twin it with a proper, good, facilitated school in Cape Town, or in Bloemfontein, or wherever. So, or in Joburg, but there must be a department, there must be a program or a competition so that you get that school to buy into this. So if you twin Carnarvon or Sutherland, you can even go to primary level. Those schools will go and visit Carnarvon, but they will also invite the Carnarvon scholars to go to that school, maybe for a week or 2 weeks. So, and you can, you create tourism by taking the schools to Carnarvon and Sutherland and Bronkvlei, but you also give an opportunity to the kids in Sutherland and Carnarvon to grow other things. They can join the debating societies, and they can collaborate, and there are many, many, many things. So, So I think, you know, you should, but they must have a budget for that, those schools, and they must assist them. Then on the fencing of the 132,000 hectares, is it your budget to fence it? Or who will pay for that? Because, you know, trying not to be in conflict with agriculture, you have to fence it properly. Sandparks will tell you that because of their experience in the Karoo National Park. So I just want to know who's paying for that. And then your agreements with Agri South Africa and Sandparks, is there not a conflict, you know, with regard to that? And then also, is there a tourism potential? You know, if you go onto the periphery of the 132,000, you know, maybe allow Sandparks to open two or three small little lodges or camps. But what you'll bring the whole world to come on the periphery. They don't come to visit, you know, the SKA exact site, but they will come to that, and there they can learn more about space. They will have quietness. And, you know, I see, and I've said that in the budget vote, that more and more people of Europe wants to come to South Africa just simply to escape this. And, you know, they will come for other things. So I don't know whether you can allow that and whether it will disturb the quietness, you know, on the periphery of that. And then, finally, if you look at the ABN, the rollout of the ABN, will the various telescopes talk to each other? And why do you do it? Is it trying to better what you're getting from the sky or space? Or is it really to enhance, you know, or also to give opportunity in the various countries, you know, about astronomy? Or will it be a better telescope if you go to the various corners of Africa?
You want to answer?
Another question. I'm a finance person. Nada.
I just have one more question. You are going to subsidize 300 rural homes. You have an agreement with Vox Telecom. I just want to know, in terms of rand value, how much will the subsidy then be for them? And how feasible will it be then to give them broadband access into these rural homes?
Thank you, honourable members, for your questions. And I think, you know, coming at the end, it's very good. Most of the questions I've noted have been asked. But I just wanted to find out, in Australia, in which state? Towards Perth and...
Western Australia,
okay. I just wanted to know which state was it, and I think it will be important for us probably in the next term to have a joint meeting with the Department of Education and Higher Education, and have a presentation so that they also understand and they can also be part of. I also wanted to know the collaboration between the SKA project and the astronomy, the science, I think, and with the issue of the koi and sign community, and I agree with Honorable Matale that and also Honorable Koronov to have probably a collaboration or linking, because when we're talking about it might have also a positive negative effect. It will be good, and I'm excited that. I mean, that community, the sons and boys, will always complain that they are not taken care of. But I think they're going to have the best scientists there, because there's a target and it is there in their community. And I think it's something that we need to also inform them about, that they are benefiting, you know, positively. You know, I was just thinking, for instance, in Tanzania, they had a concerted effort on promotion of Swahili, so that then it benefits the locals. Now, you find that in most hotels and stuff like that, there's a lot of people who know Swahili who don't know English will be benefited, but it's got a positive negative effect. You know, you don't know whether to say positive or negative, but it's got that kind of effect. I think the treaty will be, if we know early about it, so that you can prepare and ensure that the committee will make that presentation to Parliament will be very helpful. The hydraulic fracturing, what is the status thereof? Is it still on the thread or what have you? On the issue of collaboration with Sanparks, I think it's Honorable Koronov who raised it. I also wanted to know, because it's with that Sanpark, but also tourism. So probably that department will be on the completion for the 64 by March 2018. I just wanted to know how far are you to that? We are how many months to? It's about 9 months, nine months to March. I know that the first phase was like a piloting, and you have mastered now, and so it will not be as slow as it was before. Then just on the issue of jobs that have been created, was it permanent jobs or part-time or seasonal or temporary jobs or that were created? And at the end of the completion of what is the projection of the number of jobs that will be created by the whole project. And lastly, I think it's the other African partners that you're going to be collaborating with. Are they coming in as equal partners in terms of resources? Or maybe the correct answer also is to ask whether South Africa is an equal partner to the others, like in Australia and so forth. And I think I also had the issue of the gender, the women, if there is a strategy to increase the number, a concerted target to bring up the number of women who will then benefit from the batteries and stuff like that. But most in the main, I've been covered by most of the honourable members. It's very funny that Honourable Der Blanche didn't say anything on this. It's unlike her.
Chair, as I've been to the site and to Meerkat and to where it's been built, I actually just basically got an update, and I went through my mind as we went through the presentation. I actually literally walked through my mind through where the places where we visited. So to me, it was just enlightening to hear the progress, I was just reminded of how great the visit was, actually. So I don't have any questions.
Okay.
My only concern, if I may raise something, is still on big data, but I didn't want to ask it again, because I always ask about the big data and how far we are with training people to do the work on the big data. But I've asked that, I don't think every time they come here I ask, do we have enough people to assist the big data? Because we've seen those huge cords that they are literally this large, that are supposed to bring the big data to, I think they're going to bring it to Cape Town. And do we have enough people and students and technicians and scientists to deal with the big data? But I ask that every time, Chair, so I didn't want to ask it again. That's why I kept quiet.
Thank you very much. And I think it's good for the community of the Northern Cape, also including that even with communication, they were the first to benefit from the set-top boxes. So I think it's good that, you know, development is spreading, and they cannot just concentrate it in Western Cape, Gauteng, and then KZN. Thank you very much. Over to you, Dr. Adam, or any of your colleagues.
Yeah, and I'll call in Anita and Kucha as needs be when we reach the different areas of their expertise. SAMHSA, the space question from Honorable Matale, I don't think we collaborate enough with them. We have started on the African Space Strategy, which also requires what we're calling the African Research Cloud, which is a computing system which we're going to invest in. And they're partners in using that same computing platform. In terms of actual research projects, I think not enough has happened, and it's certainly something with the new director there, Val Moonsami, who was part of this project partly in his position in the Department of Science and Technology. He has come over and chatted to us, and with him being there, I think it will work better. So the honest answer is not enough, actually. The question on the aircraft overflights, and that's a very good question, and we've been in discussion with the Civil Aviation Authority on this very point. The thing is, if it's a scheduled flight and it's high enough up, you can manage that. You know when the plane's coming. So if there was a flight every minute, that would be a problem. But if it's coming, you know, once an hour or so, every half an hour, you can manage that because you know when it's coming. And then you can understand that you need to take out that piece of data and recognize the signature in the data of the plane. It would be problematic if unscheduled flights by small aircraft took place. In other words, if you found guys coming over and buzzing the site, and they'd get close enough to damage the receivers. At this stage, above 3,000 feet, and in fact, those flights are much higher than that. They're going over 30,000 feet. There's not the danger to damage the instrument. And the data that you do pick up, you know where it is and you know what it is, and so you can filter it out. Originally there was a fear by the Civil Aviation Authority that we were going to stop them flying there. But that can't be, you know. If we did that, then it would impact South Africans' lives to an unacceptable extent. We don't contemplate that. Search for extraterrestrial intelligence. I mean, there is a program on Meerkat. Will be used for that purpose, to look for signals from other civilizations, for want of a better word. And whether you find one or not is anyone's guess, and so it's not been given special time. I mean, they're taking the data that's been gathered by the other projects and applying their particular algorithms to that data, so that we're not especially allocating them any separate time. No, because it's, you know, with respect, it's a project that can go on forever, looking for other civilizations. It's not something you can define. If you find it, well, that's probably the biggest news story of all time. You know, but you can't count on that. And also, you know, one has to ask the question: Will all civilizations communicate by radio waves ultimately? Maybe there'll be some other technology that they'll be using, and we're not set up for that. So that's a good question which we can't really answer at this point. Issue of uneven benefits. Some communities getting, others not. It's not just the sand that's there that will be benefiting. There's a large black community in that area, and the majority of whom are not sand. So one needs to take that into account as well. Outside that area, I mean, I guess we have our bursary programs, which are open, you know, for a university to anybody. We don't ask the question, do you come from Carnarvon, as to when we give you a bursary. Although at the school level we do. We don't support other schools. We only support the schools in that region. But for university purposes, we support people from all over the country. But yes, I mean, I think it's a good question. You may find that, and in fact, the education department, the headmaster was complaining to us because he says, now, because of you, we are seen in Carnarvon as a privileged school. And so in a sense, what has happened is that we have our investment has been discounted, which is something we need to address, because we didn't put that in simply for it to be taken away in another way. So that's an issue that we can maybe address with the Education Committee. Operational cost of Meerkat, I mean, at this point, and maybe this is also a question where Thomas, if he wishes, could, Dr. Heider could say something, but I don't want to put him on the spot either. I think that at this point we don't have fears beyond this MTEF of operational issues with Meerkat. There are the resources to operate it. Obviously beyond that, we don't know, you know, because nobody knows. But certainly there are ongoing discussions with Treasury, and we I'm not worried about it. At this point, getting the operational costs covered. I'll get on to Honourable King's questions about finances in a minute. But the local communities' telecoms, I mean, that's been a burning question. And we need to face up to the fact that these technologies change. You know, if we offer so-called trunked radio as an alternative to cell phone communication in 2017, by 2020 they might not be adequate, because the technologies that other South Africans have access to would have surpassed that. And so a promise that we've made to those communities is that roughly on a 3-year cycle, we will assess the needs. We'll go out and say, what do you want? And we've done that already this last year, where in 2013, when we looked at the needs of those communities, they had not said anything about Wi-Fi. Now they want Wi-Fi. And so what we've looked into is putting directional antennas in the homes. Because if you use, you know, if somebody becomes a Wi-Fi hub, some farm there, it's going to mess everything up. But it is possible to do it in a responsible way if with directional transmission capability. So that's something we're looking at. What one also has to understand is that before we came there, there was very limited service anyway. I mean, Telkom's servicing of those lines had dropped simply because of the lack of usage. And the mobile operators were also not really interested, simply because it's just, I mean, there's a small market. So, in a sense, although you might argue that what they have is not what you have in your pocket or in your bag in terms of a mobile device, they didn't have it in the beginning. So, and it's arguable whether those communities ever would have been serviced by the carriers, because there isn't a market incentive. But nevertheless, I mean, it's an area of ongoing concern, legitimate concern by the communities, and what we have to do is step up to the plate and service that need. I can't be getting onto the cost of that. I don't have that at my fingertips, exactly how much we pay in Vox. I mean, I don't want to give a number and it gets written down, but I can certainly get back to you on it. Cyber security, I mean, we are looking into it. I mean, the last thing we want is some hacker, you know, knocking out Meerkat disabling observations for a week or something. And we are looking at it. But it is a serious concern. I mean, people just play the fool and do stuff like that just because they can. The completion of the dishes, can we do it on time, given the fact that it's been a slow ramp up? Answer is yes. In getting up to the correct quality in the dishes, there were discussions with the supplier. Those were ironed out a year and a half back or so, and now it's happening on as it should happen. So at this point, I think there are either 46 or 47 antennas, dishes which have been lifted. The full quota is 64. There are 57 or 58 pedestals, which is that thing on top of which the dish sits, out of the 64 that have been erected. I don't think that, certainly the dishes are not on critical path at the moment. I mean, there's some other parts of the system, which you might want to come in here, but I mean, I also don't see any issues there. The back-end correlator, science data processor, I mean, you can erect the dishes, but there's no point unless you can interpret what's coming onto them. So there's that side of it. We only just made the 16. We had about a day to spare on that. The 32 we made more comfortable. Anything can happen, but at this stage in the project meetings, and we had one a couple of days ago, we have one on a two-weekly basis. I'm not anticipating issues. But as I said, you can always get nasty surprises, but in terms of our analysis, it's looking okay.
So, as a buffer to the March deadline, we have an internal litmus test in September, another one in December, and then we roll out to the end of March, and that's how we, it's a lesson learned from the first goal, that we realized that by having those shorter definite milestones, we're able to assess our progress, you know, do what one of the scientists called retrieve bodies out of the trenches, and then achieve the next goal, and so forth. So, yeah, I can say with confidence that we will make the March timeline.
Okay, the overall cost of the SKA, we're in a big discussion at the moment around the so-called cost cap. And the international community has put, for SKA Phase 1, a €674 million cost cap on SKA 1 construction. So we're trying to get the project into that €674 million. I think we can do it. If we can't, then what they'll have to do is modify it somewhat. And we want to avoid that because it might result in some diminution of capability. What are we going to pay towards that? Well, that hasn't been decided yet. It's part of the treaty discussions. However, it looks as if we're going to, like Australia, we're going to contribute about 14% of that. And then the UK about 25% and so on. And it's the host countries, South Africa and Australia, pay slightly more. However, there are the other countries also contribute, and so in a sense we're getting kind of 86% for 14% or whatever, 100% for putting in 14%. What have we paid so far? I think the Meerkat total cost about 2.2 billion by when to cost of completion, rand, but not euro. And then the running costs of SKA1, they estimate that the running costs of any instrument like that are around about 10% of capital costs per annum. And so you've also got to add the Meerkat on to the 650 million. So you're looking at, you know, I guess around about 900 million euros altogether. And you take 10% of that, that's 90 million. 14% of 90 is what we'll be paying towards operating costs. So that gives you a rough idea of where you're at. But as I said, none of it's agreed yet, but that looks like the way it's going. Gender ratio, I mean, point taken. We do have an affirmative program, and I mean, I signed off on a call for proposals 2 days ago, and in that there are KPIs, agenda-specific KPIs for the program. You know, but one must understand that it just is the way it is to some extent, that in the physical sciences, unlike biological sciences, for whatever reason, there are fewer women at this point in time, and one has to work on that. I won't speculate as to why they're different for different sciences, but it just is the way that we find it in South Africa. Twinning of schools, I think it's a good idea, but I'm not sure that we can lead on that, you know, given the fact that we're just a project, you know, we can. But certainly, if others took the lead, we could certainly support it. The issue of who's paying for the fencing, ultimately it will be for the account of the International Treaty Organization. And they will, obviously we're putting money into that, but they're paying us to manage the site. And out of the operating costs, out of the 10% of the capital costs, which are operating costs, we'll be paid from that amount to manage the site. So in a sense it'll be, we'll do it, but we won't be paying for it. There are fences currently because there are farms, but obviously they need to be maintained. Issue of conflict of interest with AgriSA and Sandfox, I mean, that's an interesting point. You know, clearly it's different, and you know, if Sandfox manages it, there are potentially going to be allegations that the predators are hiding on the Sandfox land. I think there's different ways to go here. You could lease the farmland back to farmers with the implication that if any breaches of the AGA Act were undertaken, then there'd be the right to farm there would be taken away. That's a difficult one to manage. So I suspect that the cooperation of the farmers will go around our contribution in various ways to the remaining farmers in the area. Of course, there are other farms. In terms of the land acquisition process, what we've done in some instances, where a farmer says to us, you know, you're buying 2 of my farms, but now I don't have an economic unit anymore because I've got 3 farms, and so you must now buy the other one, even though you don't need it. And we've done that, you know, because it's just natural justice. You have to do it. And so in the case of those farms, we could certainly work with AgriSA to get those farmers back into farming productively. So, I mean, the discussions are going around those types of topics, but yeah, I mean, we haven't finalized any agreement with Sandfox yet. There are discussions underway, and they're keen, and that would make sense for people who are used to managing areas like that to manage them rather than us. Tourist potential, and I think it can be done, you know, but clearly one doesn't want to, you don't want to open yourself up to people breaking the law, and also we don't want to be in the limelight for disciplining people either. You know, we'd rather not have to do it. All those discussions can be had, particularly with Sandfox on board. Anita, maybe you want to talk about the AVN and the purpose of the AVN with respect to African science and so on.
Sure, I will. Thank you, Chair. So the African VLDI Network project has got 2 goals. The one is to prepare the countries, our partner countries who support us in the bid, to be ready to host SKA Phase 2 stations. And we are quite serious about saying that we do not want expats to fly in to maintain telescopes on African soil. We want to make sure we can do it ourselves. So a big part of that is to focus on governance and science technology funding in Africa, working very closely with governments to make sure that the country establishes the right institutes to be able to employ scientists and engineers that can work on the SKA, and then securing funding from the treasury to pay these people's salaries to make sure that people are equipped with the right tools and into the right networks internationally to be able to maintain telescopes that are built on the African continent. So that's the first part of it. The second part, which is very closely linked to that, and I think through our experience on the South African project, we realized that it took us really, if we're honestly about looking at it, in terms of readiness to be running these facilities, it's going to take at least 10 years. You know, if you want to produce one PhD and start at the B degree level, it's taking you 7 to 10 years to do that. And we want to make sure that the African partners don't think that they can catch up in 2 years' time. So for most of the countries, the interventions will be 10-year interventions with a very strong human capital development program. The African VLBI network of telescopes itself will basically work in three different modes. The one is where you as a country now have a radio observatory, and for about 30% of the telescope time, you can design your own program, make your own partnerships, collaborations, and so on, and run your own science program. And so we go through the whole process of basically transferring our knowledge in that regard. The case of Ghana, for instance, we've just funded them for a workshop at the end of July, I think it's July, because they want to establish themselves as a West African hub for radio astronomy. It's the only telescope in that part of the world, so they're bringing together the whole of West Africa to their telescope to form a single dish program. The second mode of operations would be as an African VLBI network. So as soon as you have four telescopes on the continent that can be linked up, as a network, you can do your own science. And Africa will own that network, and Africa will determine what science gets done with that. It's about another third of the time. And then the last third would be to work with global networks. We've just demonstrated that we can work with the European VLBI network successfully, and Dr. Adam can say more about that media release soon. So that's the three modes that we will be working on. So it's a standalone African network of a world-class standard that can collaborate with other networks in the world, but it's also to get countries ready for the second phase of this case.
Issue of fracking, I mean, it's not been something that's come up recently. I think that partly that could be because the gas price dropped, and from an economics point of view, it doesn't make sense to continue the exploration at the current prices. I know the DST is in discussions with the DMR, Department of Mineral Resources, about not just fracking, but about other mining activities as well. So there is that relationship between the two departments. Also, from the point of view of any environmental impact assessment that's done in that region, the Department of the Environment always consults us, even on renewables projects, so that if there's an EIA application in that region, we will know about it. Obviously, there are a whole range of renewables projects, and we're working with those companies to make sure that both of us can realize, both science, SKA, and those companies, and the Department of Energy can realize their objectives. Jobs. The jobs in that fact sheet on the slide there, I mean, those are employment opportunities and full-time jobs rolled into one. I don't know, Lorenzo, whether you've disaggregated the full-time jobs. But you know, in the fullness of time, I mean, clearly they're the SKA organization, SKA South Africa, will employ a couple of hundred people. Some of them, most of them will be scientists and engineers and artisans on the site. So there's that size of operation. And then there are a range of service providers, and I think you can, I suppose, calculate it, and I haven't done this yet, so I don't want to stick my neck out, but in terms of what we will get to manage the site, we will employ people, and we will employ, the figures that I've seen are at least 25 people to manage that site, and those are the farm workers that have come off there, will come off those farms. And be given employment by us. A short answer is we haven't looked at a total job creation number, but it would ultimately it would be several hundred people, including our own people, that would be employed in the project. And I don't know whether Hutsa, you want to venture on the big data question.
Right. So, thanks for raising the question. So, big data is becoming the more central, one of the core projects now that we are undertaking under Meerkat. We are commissioning a formal project right now with formal specs, but that will include not only activating Meerkat machine learning products on the Meerkat system, but also we are in talks with UCT, the AIMS, the Africa Math Institute for Mathematical Studies, with the idea that we will develop skills in this regard. Just as a footnote, big data, machine learning, artificial intelligence skills are so hot right now. It is. I mean, yeah. And let me leave it at that.
Yeah.
So, to retain 20 people, we may have to look through 50. That kind of ratio, and also expect a high turnover. I mean, American companies are paying these people hundreds of thousands of dollars at university.
Mm.
So, enjoy holding on to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know. In terms of big data, the Africa Research Network has been stated before. We have aligned ourselves with the DST strategy for the three-tier national research cyber infrastructure that includes the networks as well as data centers, with a view that Meerkat will be one of the core areas for distributing at least astronomy data, but also provide the template for both SKA and Meerkat and other formats of Tier 1 cloud infrastructure. The Tier 2, which includes intra-university networks, UCT, Stellenbosch, and a few other universities are actively prototyping as we speak, with the vision that they'll be able to take some of the data we produce, some of the data that the National Space Agency will produce, create interdisciplinary platforms so that this becomes a shared problem instead of a singular problem. We have aligned it as well with the African VLBI network, because they ultimately will require processing capability going forward. So we are paying central attention to the question of machine learning. And you're right, the data is massive. We are speaking to the Americans who are producing software, at least in astronomy space, who are talking about who produce software that most astronomers use that processes a portion of data in days. It takes days to process a single observation. And we're trying to, we've got engineers working hard. I mean, we're throwing 10-factor performance optimization so that we get much, 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 much higher output out of our data. Otherwise, it is going to overwhelm scientists. And that is a global problem where a lot of such instruments are producing so much data and scientists are using lower percentages, I'm talking less than 40% of the data that is produced, just because there's just not enough time to go through everything. So, yeah.
Okay. Sure. I think that kind of covers, unless I've missed something in my mind. Oh, yes. First of all, we have the same, we have equal status as South Africa with the other members. Membership requires an annual membership fee, and we pay that as do all the other members. Our African partner countries are not members, they don't pay a membership fee. They are part of our
in terms of their status in terms of our program, Anita's described ultimately what we will do with the ADN is we'll hand over all of the operations and the ownership of the instruments in those countries to whatever institution is put forward by that country to operate. For SK phase 2, we haven't really worked out the modality yet. As to, you know, what, and ultimately if something is in your country, you will operate that instrument. And that's the principle that we work on. But I imagine that there would be people from the international organization also active in that country, from the point of view of monitoring it from their perspective. So it would be a jointly managed activity, unlike the ADN, which ultimately the model is to hand it over to the country. I don't know, it's not defined further than that at this point, so I can't give great details there.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Thomas, do you want to say it?
Thank you, Shana. I think I came to note all the questions that the honourable members asked, and I think that Dr. Adam has covered most of them. If there are gaps that you'd like us to address, I'd be happy to, but I think they were all covered. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Adam, the other information that Honourable King requested for you, can send it through Shana.
I've got a number in my head, but it might be wrong, so I'll have to say.
Okay. They'll do it through the committee. Yes. Thank you very much. I think you want to say something, Honourable Dongye?
Thanks, Chair. Okay, Doctor. When do the project is going to start? When are we going to see the fruit of the work you are doing? Is it working now? Mm-hmm. Or is
still
on the line?
Okay. Let me just to answer that, I mean, it is working. One of the advantages of radio astronomy is that you can use any size array you want to, but the bigger array you have, the better. So we have already images that we're producing that are, you can generate scientific publications from these. So that the answer is yes, it's already working. Ultimately, from March next year, we'll have a fully functioning scientific instrument that can be used and that will be used by our so-called large survey projects, the ones that I said we've put out calls for proposals from. There'll also be the open time that will work from them. And for 5 years from the 1st of April 2018, you will have the best radio telescope in the world operating in South Africa. And at the end of that 5 years, it will be integrated into SK1. So the full Meerkat telescope will be operating from early next year. It is partly operating now already. Okay.
I think we will put within our program to see the end of the fully fledged 64 in March. We will do that.
Definitely. Look forward to that.
No, Chair, the problem is I'm not quite sure. There's a Centec, Centec is in telecommunication, but is supplying the network. And you are supplying, I don't know, so I'm not quite sure. I'm a little bit confused. That's my problem.
Your question is, how different are they from Centec?
Yes. And they can collaborate.
Or how do they relate or collaborate?
I think there's an overlap, obviously, through in two areas. I mean, firstly, the antennas we use look similar. And secondly, they govern frequency allocation, in which they decide on who gets what frequency band. And we have to work with Centec because we don't want them to allocate transmission bands and radio astronomy bands. And they, I mean, there's obviously the ICASA, which is the regulator, and CENTEC, and they regulate the overall activity. But then CENTEC allocates frequencies to different users. So the similarity between us is that we are all about radio waves, but they're very different applications.
Okay. Thank you very much, and thank you very much for the full team that is here. Thank you for coming to explain to us, to give us progress. And as I said, that we'll put it as part of our oversight program, so that you go and see. We also have new members in the committee, so we can all go there, probably in March.
You can have a committee session in Carnarvon.
Yes. Definitely. So we'll do that, but we'll make arrangements. Once again, thank you very much for coming, for giving us progress on the SKA. It is an interesting and an exciting development in our country, and collaboration, we're talking of a better Africa and a better world in May, and this is exactly what that translates to, because also, as you said, that with our African partners, they will benefit because of us, because they are not paying the subscription. So it's the Ubuntu aspect there. So I think we'd like to thank you once again. If there is any other issue that come from members at any particular point, we will definitely communicate with yourself. Also through Dr. Thomas to get the answers if you need some answers in relation to that. I don't know if you want to say some last words.
Just to end off, thank you very much. I felt listened to and appreciated, and thank you very much for the courteous way that you've addressed my colleagues it was a privilege, in fact, to come here, and we're very aware that you're representing taxpayers and citizens of the country, and we need to account, because it's not our money we're spending, it's your money and the country's money, and so thank you very much for the very appreciative way that you've listened to us and asked the questions, and we deeply appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. So we're here also to ensure that the treaty that we want going through also Parliament, that we're there to process that, to ensure that it does go through.
Yeah. I guess Dr. Arthur Haider and his staff will keep the committee in the loop on that, and with respect to the timing, we should know quite soon when that treaty will be signed, and that will then come through to the committee.
Thank you very much once again. Honourable members, that then brings us to the end of the presentation and the meeting today. Yeah, so our next meeting will be next week on Wednesday, but then we will get notification from Ms. Isaacs, Shanaz, and of the venue and of the meeting itself. Yeah, thank you very much. There is tea and juice and whatever you all invited thereof. But lastly, honourable members, just for honourable members, you can have it. There's 19%. You can't drink water, so you can drink tea. Save water, drink tea.
There's no water.
Oh, there's no water. Honourable members, I just wanted to inform you that Dr. Renee our content advisor is coming back on Friday. So she'll be here next week, so at least to, but I was just requesting that probably through Shanaz, if you could give her something, then we can buy her a voucher, just to welcome her and congratulate her for a bundle of joy. If it's okay with yourselves, yeah. We'll give it to Shanaz. Where? Which one? which chairperson's budget? But thank you very much. The meeting is now adjourned. Have a blessed week.
So what are you trying to find? Is there something concept?
Thank you.